All right. Well, welcome to another podcast. This time is a special one. We're going to recap one of the biggest events in maritime jiu-jitsu, the Rogue Grappling Grand Prix. And now I'm joining you, Josh Presley, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Black Belt, and your host. And I'm also the Rogue Grand Prix champion. Yeah. Got the belt to prove it. So yeah, this event just took place last weekend. I thought, you know, it'd be a good time to recap, talk about what happened, talk about the matches while it's still kind of fresh in our mind. So yeah, Scott, my student, he's a blue belt with us tonight. He was also my corner man at the event, so he kind of had a firsthand experience. He's also one of my main training partners for this event, you know, and throughout the year for the tournaments that we've done. So yeah, we'll just talk about the Grand Prix. Scott, maybe you as someone that's a little bit newer to jiu-jitsu, how did you first kind of hear about this Rogue Grappling or Grand Prix, or like what did it really mean to you when you heard about it?
I guess I saw a lot of the posts and whatnot on social media, and then you talking about it, and I looked into it a little, saw some old footage, and it seemed like there were great matches and and lots of good participants in years past. So there was pretty good build up. There were a lot of people talking about it at Halifax and at Resi BJJ, and there were definitely some pretty competent grapplers there.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this tournament, if you don't know, is that this is a no time limit tournament. Now, most of the tournaments that are around here, what would you say? Like, it's probably like kind of like 5, 6. If you get up to the advanced levels, you can go for longer. But what would you say the average tournament match length is around here? 5, 6 minutes?
Yeah, definitely. And then like special events or whatever. maybe 10, 15. But nothing as long as like Brittany's match there, the 24 minutes.
Yeah, 24 minutes. And just having to go in knowing, you know, this isn't going to end until somebody taps. I always say it's just as much mental as it is physical with a no time limit match. Because, you know, we'll talk about some of the matches that happen. You know, you really throw your best attacks at your opponent, best submissions, and they get out. That's really taxing mentally to go through. So that's why I thought it was kind of unique. It's a no time limit tournament. Personally, I'd only ever done one no time limit tournament before Rogue. Now, this was at a U.S. grappling event. This was actually in Virginia. I was down training with Ryan Hall, a famous grappler, UFC fighter. And yeah, it just happened to kind of be at the same time while we were down there. They actually did gi and no gi, two separate tournaments in the same day, all no time limit matches. It's kind of crazy to think about now. There's no way I would be able to do that now. I'm way too old for that.
Yeah, really.
So yeah, Rogue Grappling. I believe they had their first of Grand Prix event in 2019. Now their idea was basically they wanted to have a collection of tournaments, 4-5 tournaments a year. And their idea was to have the open weight champions of each tournament compete for the belt. And they would also obviously have some invitees to fill out the bracket. So we thought it was really cool. You know, it's like you kind of have to earn your spot to get in. And it was like a prestigious tournament. Plus, they then said it was going to be for a championship belt. I mean, who wouldn't want to win a championship belt in jiu-jitsu when, you know, you have that opportunity, right? Absolutely. So yeah, it was kind of cool. 2019, I earned my spot twice, actually. I won two open weights. I wanted to make sure they didn't forget about me the first time. And that time I won my first round match. It was a couple minutes. It was a good match for me. And then I lost in the semifinal to Jared McIntosh. Sure, if you're watching this, you probably know Jared McIntosh, badass black belt from New Glasgow. Then COVID happened. We wondered if the Grand Prix would happen the next year. Luckily, it still did. And then most of the people, I believe, were invited that year. And that year, I lost in the first round to Anthony's, a black belt, GFT, I believe, his team. And I also was injured in that match. I injured my knee, which if you've ever experienced that in a tournament, you lose and you get injured. Like, it's kind of a double punch in the nuts. Like, it really sucks. But, you know, credit to Anthony. That was a great knee bar. But it just sucked to get injured in the event. So obviously it kind of left, you know, a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. I want to get back out there and compete again and do it again after I was healed and recovered. And then this time, the third Grand Prix, I was actually invited. I didn't have to earn my spot. They just had a number of people drop out and whatnot. And I guess I had good results in the last one. So yeah, I was invited. There's time there was 8 men and also 8 women in a separate bracket. And, you know, they're trying to figure out who is kind of the best grapplers in the Maritime. So to me, it feels like kind of a prestigious tournament.
Yeah, definitely. So did Jared win it last time when he beat you?
No, Jared lost to Joel. That would have been in the first one. Joel won the first one. Grand Prix champion. And then in the second one, that was the one I lost the first round. That was won by Sean McManus. He's a good, he's either brown belt or black belt. I think he might be black belt in jiu-jitsu now, and he's a black belt in judo. He's got a really, really heavy judo background. And he won the second one. He had a really good match in the final with Justice Copeland. I'm sure most people would probably know he's a badass grappler too. So yeah, this is a tough tournament, man. It's very tough to win 3 no time limit matches in a row. So this event, this time they were having it in Fredericton. They often have it in New Brunswick. Fredericton, it's like a 4-hour drive from where we were. So also at this time too, Hurricane was hitting Nova Scotia. If you live in Nova Scotia past August, you're screwed.
Basically, eh?
So yeah, we had to deal with that. You know, we were questioning whether this event would be rescheduled or happen at all. So we actually tried to get ahead of it. We drove up to Moncton Friday night, and then the event took place on a Saturday. So we got there. We were one of the first people there. Also, we should talk about too, they had the blind bracket. So usually when you sign up for a tournament, usually I'd say the night before, sometimes a couple days before, they will release the bracket. So at that point, you get to see who you're fighting in the first round. You get to know who your opponent is. At this tournament, they said it was all going to be a blind draw, blind bracket. So they weren't telling anyone the first round opponent. They weren't showing anyone the bracket. It was a complete mystery until right before you stepped out onto the mat. Now, what did you think about that when you heard about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was good that they were trying something new, but, I just think, there's a reason why most events out there kind of build it up in the time leading up to it. Just like, you know, at least know the first round matchups or like have some idea of something to look forward to. But when it's just a mystery, it's like, what do you even talk about? You know,
when it comes to hyping up the event, I think you're right. I think that maybe they missed something there. People could have got excited about those first round matchups. You know, I think people probably would have been something to talk about. But it is an added thing as a competitor. It does kind of play with your head a little bit where you don't really know who you're going to go against. So you can't game plan. You can't even know, you're going against a big guy or a small guy. Like, you just don't know until you step out on the mat. So it is kind of an extra mind game that you have to deal with. So I think I would prefer just kind of knowing who I go against, but I think they just like to have something different. You know, I can appreciate them trying to kind of do something out of the ordinary, and it is kind of cool. So all they told me was that I was the first match, but they wouldn't tell me who my opponent was.
Hey, that's when we were looking around for the guys warming up.
Yeah, so then we're like, okay, well, let's see who's warming up really hard. But then, you know, some couple people are warming up pretty hard, you know, so I'm thinking, maybe it's this guy, maybe it's that guy. Giancarlo was sitting right on the edge of the mat. It was his home gym. Synergy BJJ is where this event was. So I was like, maybe it's Giancarlo, you know, maybe mentally trying to get ready for that. You really kind of have to be ready for anyone. And then, yeah, there was, I think it was Jordan Lawrence. He was really repping some takedowns hard and stuff. So I was like, okay, he must be the first match or the second match because he's warming up really hard. But, you know, that's kind of the mind games that you're playing. Like, is it this guy? Is it that guy? You don't know. Finally, they announced I was going to go against Scott McKinnon. Now, he's a brown belt from Victory, quite a tall guy. I've never competed with Scott before. I think he was in the team event that Presley BJJ did in March. I know we went against Victory, and if I remember correct, I think Scott was in that one. He might have went against Noah, if I remember right. And he did have a couple wins, I think. But yeah, I knew he was tough. That was the thing. You know, everyone in this tournament is tough. You can't underestimate anybody. But I knew I was going to try to quickly kind of get into my game. I say my overall kind of broad game plan for this one was try to get on the back. specifically, you know, my strategy was kind of like pull guard, sweep to get on top, pass the guard, and mount back choke. That was kind of my strategy in my head for how I was hoping these matches would play out. And luckily in that first one, I was able to kind of make it work like I was planning. I was able to tie him up and get the sweep. It was kind of a sweep I don't even really do often. Like he was, I got both feet kind of on his stomach and just kind of up, and he kind of fell over.
Yeah.
It was, it's not something I often do, but I just knew the position we were in, I could just off balance him that way. And then I thought about going for the ankle lock, but he was pretty quick to just kind of grab a hold of my gi jacket and pull me in. So I didn't want to waste too much effort on going for that ankle lock. I used that to just kind of climb up on top. And then I was able to get the pass. And then I think I was going bow and arrow. He got out of that. So I was able to get the first one, the first win. I mean, you've competed before. Talk about how nerve-wracking the first match is. It's always like, you know, when you're the most nervous, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I guess like once you get out there, once you start going, it's the nerves seem to disappear, you know, but leading up to it, oh my God, like how much should I warm up? Like, what's he going to do, this and that. And then when you get out there, it's just, I don't know, jiu-jitsu, but it's, did you have many nerves going into the first one or?
Yeah. I mean, a little bit for sure. I think I'm more nervous, like kind of leading up like the week of the event, you know, just kind of thoughts about it and all that stuff. So like when we were there, I didn't feel too nervous, but I always say it's a mental battle with these tournaments where, you know, it's the delays and when it's supposed to start on time. You don't really know when you're going to go. You think you're going to go at 12 and it's 12:30, just kind of stuff like that. Where as a younger competitor, I've experienced it and seen a lot of people kind of almost mentally check out in sometimes those moments where they kind of just almost give up before they even have to fight because it's just stressful situation, you know, like you're not maybe eating what you normally eat. You're kind of away from your routine. It really is. It's a challenge more than just physically just going out and doing the match. Yeah. So I did have some nerves, but then, you know, by the time I got there and got my pretty good warm up, I was feeling pretty good. And you probably even see me there. I was kind of just like laying on the mat waiting for the event to start before it started.
Yawning, eh?
Yeah. I was just kind of trying to conserve energy. And I was thinking like, if I get in this position where I'm flat on my back at some point today, like this probably isn't going to be good. So hopefully this is the last time I'm laying like this.
Yeah. Well, I think that was it then. Yeah. It was the last time.
Yeah. So then the format of this was they did the men's bracket, then they went to the women's bracket and then back to the men's bracket. So that's how the format of the matches went. The second match of the event, first match of the women's bracket, was Tori Smith from MXT West Side, which was well represented in this event. They had several people from that gym. And she went against Abby Steele, who I believe she's Summerside. And with Jason Sago, a friend of mine. And yeah, talk about what you remember of that match. It was the first women's match. It was quite a tilt.
Yeah, that was pretty back and forth. Yeah, I think it was Tori took her down, and then have some notes.
Tori initiated the takedown, but then Abby kind of bounced back, got her down.
Yeah,
Abby controlled the start, and then Tori kind of came back. Like they both kind of had offense on each other.
Right. Yeah. Tori spent the first couple minutes in like side, top, half, closed guard. Then she went for a triangle. That's what it was. And then. Yeah. Then Abby got out, and I think it was a lot of back and forth. And then, Tori got the wrist lock finish. That was it.
Which was pretty wild. That was pretty awesome to see. And I think, Abby is very tough. I think I've rolled with Abby maybe once or twice, just on some PEI trips. And I have trained with Tori, too. That's actually kind of a funny story that I'll tell. So the last tournament that I would have done was for a guillotine production event, which was cool because I won $500. So that was sweet.
Nice. Yeah.
At that day, it was a Saturday or Sunday. I don't remember. I think it was a Saturday. Anyways, I still had my open roll at 12:30. And then the tournament was at like 3 or something. So I was taking it, you know, fairly easy in the open roll. I still was moving around, kind of using that as my warm up, I guess. And Tori messaged me and asked if she could come to my role. So I was like, yeah, sure. So anyway, she came and she must have done like 10 or 12 rolls. Like, she rolled like a lot.
Every round. I don't
every
think
round. She was competing later on, which I was thinking, like, geez, this is wild. I thought I was trying to conserve my energy a little bit, and she was fighting super hard and had some really pretty awesome rolls. Then she won her match. I won, so that was awesome. And then she had a post on Facebook the next day that I guess she had gone to like two or three other open mats before she had even came to my gym.
Savage.
she's definitely getting in all the rolling that she can, which is great, especially when you're starting out in jiu-jitsu. I think she's also the youngest competitor in the entire bracket for the men and the women. I think she's 19 or 20. So
right,
she's getting a lot of real good experience. And that match against Abby, I thought was a war. It was definitely in kind of my top three favorite matches, I thought, for the event.
Yeah, absolutely. It was back and forth. They were going for subs. It was kind of everything you'd want, for sure. And being in the gi, they didn't slow things down too much, really. It was lots of action.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. And yeah, props to Abby for an awesome match. She was in this first women's Grand Prix, and she fought really hard in that one too. So yeah, that was a wicked match to kick off the women's bracket. Next, we were back to the men's bracket. Now, I figured, watching this, I'll probably fight the winner of whoever the second men's match is, because, you know, I was first. It would logically make sense. I would go against who was second, and then the third and the fourth match winners would go against each other. Now, I don't know for sure that everyone kind of figured that out, but that's what I thought, you know, like they weren't going to give someone not a lot of rest and then make them go right back in. So I was very curious to see who was going to win that second match, which was between Jordan Lawrence, who is from MXT West Side, and he went against Manoli Daskalakis. Hopefully I said that right. He is from Synergy BJJ. Now, this was one of the quicker matches. Manoli came out, quickly pulled guard, and he got right into the armbar. He's the hometown guy, so, you know, got quite a reaction from the crowd. It was, you know, one of the nicer submissions of the tournament. Talk about what you remember from that match. And I know we were kind of watching Jordan warm up. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, you could tell that he wanted to his strength is probably stand up. Like, he wanted to keep it on the feet, or at least, like, long enough where he could shoot the takedown and probably start his game from there. But like you said, Manoli just like pulled guard and went to work. So I think Manoli just took the match, and he set the pace and went in the position that he wanted. And ultimately, it didn't take long. It was probably within the first 2 minutes that he got the sub.
Yeah, I would say so. And that's the thing. That's what I was thinking about. You know, even if you're an amazing wrestler in a no time limit tournament or a tournament at all, if your opponent comes out and pulls guard, that really takes away a lot of the wrestling advantage, because you want to be able to take them down into a good position, a position that you're comfortable with. But when they pull guard on you, no, that's not what you want. That's not really what you're probably training for. So yeah, it was a good strategy by Manoli to pull guard. And I wonder if he was watching Jordan kind of warm up too. And thinking
maybe,
that.
Yeah. So, is Manoli usually a guard player, or?
I believe so. I don't know that for sure, but I mean, I think he pulled guard in all the matches that I've seen of him so far.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, tough result for Jordan Lawrence, but I know he's a tough guy. I think he'll be back. They said he's a very active competitor. So, you know, he's also a late notice replacement. Like, I think he only jumped in on this bracket with a week's notice. So, you know, it's definitely got to be something said for that. And I think he'll be back probably in this bracket even next year. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him have a much better showing the next time.
Yeah, he was passionate. You could tell, like, when he took that loss, like, nobody likes to take a loss, but he was like, he was fired up for a sec. And then, like, once he cooled down, he was all good energy and whatnot, talking to everyone again. But he wanted it for sure. So I think you're right. He will be back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I think this loss will kind of fire him up. So then we went back. Then we had the women's bracket again. The second match in the women's bracket was Thali Levesque from Victory Jiu-Jitsu in Edmundston, New Brunswick. She went against Kayla Weatherby from Gracie Jiu-Jitsu PEI. So this is an interesting match. Sally won this one by armbar. I believe it was a pretty quick match. I think it was like kind of like 2 minutes, if I remember correct. I think they've gone four. And Kayla, they were both in the last Women's Grand Prix. Kayla had a pretty long match. I think it was against Charlene. It was like over 10 minutes, like 10 or 12 minutes, which you know, that takes a lot of heart and determination to go that long. But, you know, Thali's the champ. She's just been very dominant at these road tournaments. I think she's up to 18 or 19 and 0, all submission wins.
Every one of them.
Yeah, I think every one, yeah. And I mean, this one was pretty quick, but did you remember kind of anything about this match?
Tally just kind of like goes into it. You can just tell she's got confidence in kind of everything, especially like her stand-up game. She just kind of like slowly goes in, gets her grips, and then it's not like she really like forces anything. Just kind of, I don't know, everything seems to work out for her. She got the takedown. She got to mount pretty quick. Transition to the back, and then yeah, it was a belly down armbar for the finish.
Yeah.
And when she grabs a hold of the arm, like it's like I mean, we'll get to the match which she had against Tori, kind of more or less the same thing. Just she rips it. It's kind of gone from there, it seems.
Yeah. She's it should be said too, I did the stats after this event. 43% of the matches ended by armbar. So nearly half of the matches in this show, I think there's 14 matches, 43% ended by armbar, which to me was pretty crazy because you always see rear naked chokes every single time. There was one on this one. There's always rear naked chokes. And there usually is a couple arm bars, but I haven't seen a show like this heavily towards like that many arm bars. So to me, that was kind of.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely, yeah, what, arm triangles, rear naked chokes usually, or triangles.
Yeah,
top ones?
Triangles too. Yeah, triangle chokes. And for this one, there was a triangle, and I used the triangle to get the finish on Manoli, but it wasn't an actual triangle, but you know, I used it to set it up. So that's cool thing about triangle chokes is you use it for the actual triangle, but then it opens up. It makes arm locks a lot easier. It makes Kimuras easier. Like, there's other things you can do in the triangle, which is cool.
Right.
So yeah, then the next match... men's bracket. This one was a really good match. Giancarlo taking on Josh Whalen from Halifax Jiu-Jitsu. Now, again, we didn't know what these matches were until, you know, they were announced. So, you know, I knew whoever Giancarlo is going against in the first round, you know, it's going to be a good match. He's a very exciting style. He's a movement-based grappler, you know. A lot of movement. He likes attacking the feet. I've seen him win by Darce, I think his last one, so he's good with chokes. He's got good submissions and good submission defense. So he's taking on Josh Whalen from Halifax Jiu-Jitsu, someone I know very well. I trained with him for a number of years. And yeah, I'll let you take it away first, I guess. Talk about this match a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like... I competed against Giancarlo once, and then I've rolled with Whalen a ton. It's been a while, like since I was a white belt, but yeah, both like high energy guys. They hunt for subs. It was a barn burner for sure. Well, until they both visibly were exhausted, because like they were just throwing everything they had at each other, and like, which is exciting to watch. But holy shit, man! Like, doesn't matter how fit you are, eventually that's going to catch up to a guy, right? So you could tell, like, they'd get in a position, they'd kind of like look at their coaches or look at the crowd and just like take a breath, or you'd hear one of them say something like, oh fuck, or oh god damn it, or like, you know, like just spent. Yeah. So yeah, it was a lot of back and forth for sure. It was exciting.
I didn't have the exact time, but I think it was around 13 minutes.
Gotcha. And that's when Giancarlo ended up he grabbed a toe hold, was it?
Yeah, I believe it was a toe hold. And to me, especially when I went back and watched, because for us it was a little bit difficult to see the action live. For one, you know, I was in between matches, I was kind of trying to cool down, but I was curious to see the results of the matches because I knew these guys could be potential opponents for, you know, later on in the tournament. So I was trying to watch, but I'm also trying to recover and and whatnot. So yeah, but when I went back and watched the event, because we both watched the event or most of it before this podcast, and I, to me, Waylon had a very clear strategy. He was trying to ankle lock or leg lock Giancarlo. To me, that seemed like his strategy. He had a lot of really nice guard play, sweeps, knocking him over. And he was really, really hunting that ankle lock. And that Giancarlo said to me after, I think he's got really one of those guys that has really flexible feet, because it looked to me like Waylon had the foot lock in a couple times, but you know, then just at the last second, his foot would come out or kind of something would happen. So yeah, he seems like he must just be one of those guys with real like dexterous feet. And yeah, that to me is what it looked like. Okay, Waylon really wants to win by ankle lock. Giancarlo was also throwing some toe holds in there too, and they were in some really kind of interesting leg exchanges, which was cool to see the contrasted matches with the next match that we'll talk about. Not the next match, but like a longer match, like say that Brittany had. That was kind of like more positional play, where it was like kind of traditional, like, okay, side control, mount, turtle. But Waylon and Giancarlo was like just like almost 13 minutes of attacking footlocks, which is kind of cool to watch, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, it's pretty crazy. It went on like that long, really, because I mean, when you're going for leg locks, usually something would open up for one guy or the other, but it just kind of kept going, right?
Yeah. Like there was a couple times Waylon was quite deep. It looked like he was going to get it, but Giancarlo would just spin out or get his foot out or whatever. There was at one point Waylon come up and pass and got side control. But then I think Giancarlo was just able to re-guard. And then I think the finish was Waylon was kind of barambolo, crab ride, and looked like his other foot got stuck when Giancarlo applied the toe hold. And when you're in a toe hold, if your other foot is trapped, that's really bad, because you have to use your other foot, the one that's not in the toe hold, to try to defend, to try to either kick off your partner's hands or use that leg to try to spin out. And to me, it just looked like Waylon's leg was stuck in there. And then that's what gave Giancarlo the opportunity to get that that toe hold. But yeah, it was an awesome match to watch. To me, it was one of my more favorite matches of the tournament, kind of my top. Well, you know, I'd say it's in my top three, that and Abby and Tori. And yeah, so, you know, obviously Giancarlo, he's super tough. I have had two matches against him now. And yeah, man, it just seems like he's able to really raise his game for this tournament, this level of competition. And yeah, it was a great match.
Absolutely.
So then next was a quick one. We had Madeline from Charlottetown BJJ. I know Madeline very well. She's a really good purple belt. And now she was taking on Andrea Hayward from MXT West Side. Now, I don't know Andrea well. She's in this bracket. She's probably one of the more inexperienced competitors. She's a white belt, but she's very tough. And I always think it must be a pretty cool experience for someone that hasn't competed a lot or hasn't seen a lot of jiu-jitsu to kind of be a part of one of these shows. I think it must be cool for her. And I know they said she had a competitive dance.
I was going to say that. Career. Yeah. I think it was dance and cheer, they said. Yeah.
Yeah. The introductions, they were killing it. So yeah, that one, it was a very nice armbar finish. And to kick it off, Madeline got Andrea in a deep triangle choke, like deep. I would have tapped to this. But somehow Andrea was just kind of able to squirm and get her head out. And then, yeah, she got out. Then she actually started kind of getting some offense on Madeline. I think Madeline probably needed kind of a minute to recover from that, you know, initial triangle, you know, because you put everything into that attempt when you think you're going to get it. So you need a little bit of time to recover. But she did. She recovered well, and she got the guard, and she got a really nice armbar finish where she swung the leg over and kind of used that to knock her over. And then you could tell on the video when Madeline was applying the armbar, the true nurse that she is, she didn't want to break it. And cause more
it was gross though, man. Man, that elbow was bending and she was just a-okay. I wasn't sure, she just didn't know, like, but I don't know, you feel that pain with an armbar, so like, I don't know, she just has flexible elbows, but it was pretty gross.
Yeah, she had it bent at quite an angle, and it's, you know, Madeline was even making faces, I think, before Andrea.
Yeah, I was too. They just didn't have the camera on me.
So yeah, another armbar victory. So, you know, like already we're, you know, three or four matches in, and we've already seen three arm bars. And it didn't even click for me at the time. You know, I'm kind of in competition mode. But afterwards, and going and looking back, obviously, you really kind of start to see a pattern with the tournament, which is just kind of interesting, you know. So then we're on to the next match. I believe that one was Joe Pilmer, right? So that we're on the last first round match of the men's bracket. So Joe Pilmer, Big Joe. Now, I'd say he's probably the biggest competitor in the bracket. And he's a black belt. He's very experienced now. The thing with Joe, like I said, quick story with Joe Pilmer. I've been around jiu-jitsu for a long time, 15, 16 years now. I remember Joe when he was a blue belt. I did commentary on one of the shows or whatever he was on. He was really good then as a blue belt, but, you know, he's maybe a little bit more kind of wild with his technique. But since he's kind of refined his technique and kind of really figured out what he's good at and the strategy part, he really, really does well. I know he had fought with some injuries the past year or two, which kept him off the mat. But he had previously won a belt at the FLA Kumite. I think it was the third Kumite. He beat, I think it was Cam Nelson, I think, in the finals or on his way. He fought a number of tough guys and won the FLA belt. So, you know, I knew Pilmer was very dangerous in this bracket. And he was taking on Dylan Beaton, who I also know pretty well. Woodshop Jiu-Jitsu, Dylan Beaton, Annie Ganesh. I think Joe Pilmer's MXT St. John, if I didn't mention his gym. But anyways, Dylan Beaton, also big guy, tall guy. And this was also a pretty interesting match, too. Why don't you just kind of take it away for this, what you remember of this match?
I think Dylan pulled guard to start it. And then Joe just spent the whole match on top, essentially. That's kind of how I remember it. But Dylan, he wasn't giving up subs, and he battled. Like, it's, he was moving. He like kind of changed the position a little, but Joe seemed to just like keep kind of pinning him or getting on top in different positions. And then it went on for a while. I'm not sure how long that match was, but it was it went for a while. And I think
that was just under 13 minutes too.
13. Okay. Yeah. I think Joe got the sub with a collar choke from side control, maybe. It was
Well, actually, that's funny because I had to ask him what the submission was. I couldn't see on the video. It's really hard to see. So yeah, I had to ask him. I just messaged him on Instagram. I said, "What was that submission that you got Dylan beaten with?" Because I couldn't really tell. And he said reverse arm triangle. I didn't even know what a reverse arm triangle was. He sent me the video. Of the YouTube video, and it's basically from side control, but instead of jumping over, you just kind of smother the guy almost by pulling the arm across and keeping your weight on it while you're still in side control. So like it's basically an arm triangle, but without jumping your body over, you just kind of do it, pulling his arm across and using your body weight. So
it's a smother.
Yeah, pretty much. But you're smothering the guy with his own arm and putting your weight on his tricep. You can picture the guy in side control and moving the arm across. Probably for the people listening to this, they're not really knowing what's going on. But in side control, if you can get his arm across his neck and just put your weight on top of it, you know, it's a real smothering, also a choking feeling. So that was the finish for Joe Pilmer and Dylan Beaton. And I had to ask him what it was when I was doing the stats because I didn't want to get it wrong. And I still got it wrong. I got another one wrong.
But yeah, anyway. I saw that pie chart and I was like, reverse arm triangle. I was like, I don't know. I may not have heard of that. Or maybe it's just like some kind of like mistake or something. Did he mean to put that? Because I did see someone someone comment underneath. They're just like, reverse arm triangle, ?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I had to ask him. Usually it's pretty clear, but you know, once in a while it's pretty hard to see. I thought this tip for the next one, if anyone from Rogue is watching this, I thought, you know, and I've experienced before, you get the submission, the referee asks you, well, what was that? Sometimes it's hard to see, you know, you're choking the guy, you're down really low. And then that it's fresh in their mind. They're going to tell you. And then that should be announced, winner by triangle choke, winner by armbar. Yeah. It gives a little bit more to the crowd too. Like, oh, it was an armbar. Like I guarantee there's at least one or two people that couldn't really see, or they're talking to their friend, or they're on their phone. They don't know. So I think it's just better to kind of give people more information, you know, and just kind of just get the ref to kind of ask. And also for the commentators too, like you got to kind of let them know what was going on. But those guys did do an awesome job. It should be mentioned. I did message them, Jake and John Kelly, and I thought they did great. Good technical commentary, and also made it easy for someone that maybe doesn't train jiu-jitsu to kind of be interested. They kind of gave some, you know, facts about the people, talked about their background a little bit. What did you think about the commentary?
Yeah, no, I agree. There was some of the stats they threw out there. What was it? Tori and Abby. I was pretty impressed. Abby has 39 wins, 14 of them were submissions. Tori has 40 wins and 25 were subs. I was like, damn, the boys did their research.
Well done. Nice. Yeah. Well, they did ask us for some kind of facts and stuff too before the event. So I didn't think to put my win loss record though. I should have added that.
Yeah, really. Next time.
Also, too, we should talk about, I thought Dylan and Joe had a great match. And to me, the story of the match was obviously Dylan Poelgaard, Joe Pilmer on top. But then occasionally Dylan would escape or regard and immediately try to fire off like a leg lock or try to get into a submission. Right, and a couple times he did have Joe kind of under pressure. I don't know how close, if any of those were close at all, but enough that he really kind of had to kind of stop what he was doing and address it. And he always did eventually get back to past. But it was really, it was fun to watch Dylan. And he even went for the Craig Jones.
Oh, that was that match, right?
Between the legs, toe hold attempt, which he just tried, or he submitted Richie Martinez with at Quintet recently.
Right, yeah. And it looked like he came pretty close to catching him with it. Like, it was a good setup. I don't know. It looked good. He battled the whole time. It was good to see. Yeah, he was going for subs, like, right off the hop as soon as he got any kind of position, because there were other matches that, were just very positional, and for a sub-only competition, they weren't really going for subs as much as, I suppose they could. Dylan, on the other hand, he was firing them off. It was good to see.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing about these tournaments. I mean, sometimes you want to see certain guys go through and have more matches. In some ways, I wanted to go against everyone in this bracket because, you know, I'm sure it'd all be awesome matches. But, you know, obviously it's single elimination tournament. So, you know, the show goes on. So the next match, the last match of the first round for the women's bracket, we had Brittany Lodge from Halifax, BJJ, taking on Danae Gallant Ramsey from Gracie Jiu-Jitsu PEI. I believe Danae was in the last Women's Grand Prix. I think she had a pretty good match in that one too. Can't remember who she was against. She went against Brittany. Facts about this one: it was the longest match of the day. 24 minutes in this match until there was a submission, which was Brittany winning by armbar. So, yeah, talk about the kind of the story of this match, how it played out, and, you know, 24 minutes. What did you think about that while this was going on?
Yeah, like, oh, geez, just I sympathize for how tired they probably were. But, they battled. I don't know. It was pretty back and forth. It was definitely quite positional with that. That one was one of the ones with a lot more just position than submission attempts. But it was back and forth. They'd get in a position, they'd kind of progress, and then they'd maybe go get a little too overzealous. The person would sweep them, then they'd kind of do the same thing. And it was just, it seemed like a lot of back and forth like that. I'm trying to think, because I remember, Brittany had two matches. Like, it was one, then the next. I remember one, the girl was kind of like pushing Brittany forward. Then I think Brittany was pushing the other girl the next match. She was kind of dictating the terms for the stand-up. But yeah, it's a lot of the women seem to be really strong on their feet, and they wanted to stay on their feet. There wasn't as much guard pulling, at least right off the hop. Anyway, a lot of reaching around, grabbing the belt, and trying to go for that kind of takedown or at least position.
Yeah, which is awesome to see, because, you know, you want to be well rounded in jiu-jitsu, so it's good to see people going for takedowns, cool throws. It's great to see all that. The problem is, the reason why I didn't want to wrestle is because most of the people in this bracket are bigger than me, and it costs a lot of energy to wrestle. if you're watching this, I'm sure you've experienced wrestling. If you do it for a minute, if you can wrestle for a minute, you're in pretty good shape, because I can barely wrestle for a minute. Like, it's exhausting. You know, if you're really fighting and going for takedowns, man, that's, I always say it's like a different type of cardio doing the wrestling versus wrestling on the ground and doing jiu-jitsu. So it took a long time for me to figure that out. And yeah, I feel like my takedowns are improving now. Wouldn't say they're great, but I wasn't confident to go for takedowns in this, especially against someone bigger. I just felt like it would be better if I played to my strengths and I pulled guard and attacked from the bottom, versus even if I could get a takedown, I feel like it would have cost me so much energy that it just wouldn't be a smart choice.
Well, yeah, your matches were pretty short. So, I mean, if you just spent that extra minute or two stand up trying to get that foot sweep, get that that shot or whatever, I mean, it's just more time out there in general. And then, like, yeah, shooting for takedowns and stuff, it tires you out, and not to mention it leaves you open for worse positions than obviously starting in a guard, right, and it being your game. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, and also, I mean, 24 minutes, that's crazy. But then Brittany also had to have two other matches after that. So that's mentally quite taxing, knowing that, you know, you're tired, and, you know, also takes a lot of mental strength and to continue on through that. So, but that's what I wanted to avoid, having to have a super long match and continue going. But obviously Brittany trained very hard for this. And, you know, you wouldn't have been able to tell even that she had that long of a match from her other matches. So, yeah, that was the end of the first round. Go ahead.
Brittany had the shortest match of the day as well, eh? I think it was. Yeah. Is that true? Do you remember how long that one was?
I think it was under 2 minutes. It was maybe a minute 30. It could be less, but I'm not sure. I was trying to get some of the times, but I didn't get the exact times because the feed at some points was choppy. So I don't know for sure the exact times, but it would be good to get those. If you have those, post them up, the match times from Rogue. It'd be cool to have that that data, that information, kind of see what the average match length was.
Yeah, definitely. Cool.
They took a little break in between that and the semifinals, and we had the semifinal match, first one, which was myself taking on Manoli. Now, I had never competed against Manoli before. I know he's a very active competitor in the local scene. And yeah, funny story involving Manoli at the Breakthrough. There's a Breakthrough tournament this year in February. Right now it's September. So this was, 9, 10 months ago. Anyways, I won that one, and I fought Giancarlo in the final. More on that coming up. But I had a semifinal match. Then there were supposed to be two matches in between my semifinal match and the final. Giancarlo went first. So in this time it was different. This time I was first. Breakthrough, Giancarlo was first. He won his semifinal match. I think it was against Jericho, if I remember. Anyways, then I went, and they said, okay. I had a pretty tough match with Evan, I think. It was like 6 or 7 minutes.
Right.
Then I was pretty tired because it was an extra round as well. So that was my third match of the day. My matches were a little bit longer, I think, or anyways. Then there was a very quick match with Jake Harper, who's one of the commentators. He won by ankle lock in less than a minute. So that was the first match, down really quick. Then the next match was Jeremy Miskin and Manoli. And that was also a very quick match, where I think Jeremy Miskin was able to get around Manoli's guard, or something happened, and he was able to get a quick submission on Manoli. And I wanted one of these matches to at least go a few minutes so I could get a break.
Wasn't the case.
And that wasn't the case. Yeah. So that's that was kind of a funny story involving Manoli. He didn't help me out in that one, going against his teammates. but in this one, I was able to pulled guard. I kind of inverted. I was kind of looking for a back attempt. Then I felt like the time was right to attack the toe holds, and it got a reaction out of him. I thought for a second it was going to work, so I really did put a lot of effort into that toe hold. He spun out of the toe hold attempt, and I used that to get on top. Because remember, my strategy, pull guard, sweep, get on top, pass, mount, back, and try to get the choke. So I used the leg lock attempt to gain top position. So that kind of, that was the sweep. Yeah, and then I was able to pass, get him mount. But I did have a tough time finishing him from the mount. I was felt like I was doing well, obviously, like tiring him out. But I really wanted that arm triangle choke, and he was able to avoid that. He was just one of those guys that was just so flexible. I kind of moving his arm that I couldn't get what I wanted on that. And I was still trying to be cautious from mount and not try to give up too much because I didn't want him to get out and re-guard and then have a chance to kind of fire back with his offense. So I was trying to stay a step ahead and not give up too much while still trying to attack submissions. And then eventually I was able to force him to give me his back. And I had two or three attempts for the rear naked choke. He was able to fight those off a couple times. I thought that was it. And then I switched to the back triangle, which is one of my go-to moves from the back, especially when I can't get the choke to work. And that was one I was working on. I'm always working on in my training. So yeah, I was able to get that. And then immediately I attacked the Kimura lock because his arm was just right there. And I figured, you know, he'd already escaped two pretty deep rear naked choke attempts. So I didn't think he was going to, I figured I'd really have to go for almost like a double attack to get him to give up, which is what happened.
Yeah, he fought that arm triangle for a while.
Yeah.
It was good defense, man. It really was. I figured you would have just like given up and went for something else after a while, but I guess he eventually he just turned and you kinda S mount and took the back. Is that pretty much how
kind of wrapped him up and was able to transition to the back. But yeah, then I mean again, no time limit matches, so if it's a 5-6 minute match, you're going to give everything you got in that arm triangle attempt. But, you know, you give it a couple good squeezes and then you got to think like, oh, shit, like if this doesn't work, like, you know, I don't want to burn my arms out. So you're trying to manage your energy while still trying to use enough force or tension to kind of submit the guy. Right. Which is that to me is when the mental battle kicks in.
Definitely. Yeah. Makes sense.
So, yeah, that was good. I was happy to book my ticket to the finals. You know, I knew the job was not finished because I was there to win the belt, not just be in the finals. So I was still happy to get my ticket to the finals, though. You know, it was the first time I had actually been in the finals for it. Like I said, I lost two previous years. So, you know, it felt good. Next match, the women's semifinal, was Tori Smith and Thali Levesque. And now this was a quick armbar victory. You were kind of briefly talking about this match earlier. Take it away with Tori.
I think Tori, she kind of went for, I can't remember what it was now. I think she tried to sweep her somehow. I think there was stand up. She maybe tried to pull guard, go for a quick sweep. But then it just, she didn't nail it. And Thali just kind of stayed on top. And she eventually, I can't remember what position she was in, but she did get the armbar finish.
I think eye control armbar.
Okay, gotcha. And then once again, once she muckled onto that arm, it was pretty much game over.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Tori is going to be a really great competitor. She's already a very good competitor, but you know, she has so much further to go. She's only 19. She's a blue belt. She's got a lot further to go. She's going to get a lot more great experience. But Thali, she's just the person to beat right now, I feel, in that division. You know, she's the champ. She's determined. She's tough. I think no one was going to take the belt from her that day, you know. So, Tori still, she did amazing in my eyes. And she often wins the local tournaments or, you know, does really well and has great matches. She's definitely a submission hunter, which is really cool to see. But she just ran up against the champ this time and Thali was able to just kind of do what she does and get the armbar.
Yeah, she did a good job. And I think Tori, I mean, she competes she's probably one of the most active female competitors in the Maritimes right now. It seems like she's signed up for everything.
Yeah, she's very active. Yeah. So next we had the men's second semifinal to see who was going to face me for the belt. Giancarlo took on Joe Pilmer. Now, obviously, I was watching this one very interested. Giancarlo, totally different, totally clash of styles here. Giancarlo is very movement-based. Joe Pilmer is more, you know, more about restricted movement, top pressure, that type of game. So, yeah, what do you remember from this match?
Well, yeah, I know. I was just thinking about the weight discrepancy. It's got to be like 70, 80 pounds or something like that.
Yeah, it's, yeah. I think Giancarlo is 160 or so, and I'd say Pilmer's lost a lot of weight from when he started. I mean, obviously, he's still a heavyweight. I'd say I'm going to guess 220 or somewhere around there. I mean, judge a weight, but it was a big size discrepancy. Joe's a big dude. And he's tough to move. I competed with him in the past, and I know I knew it was going to be a tough match. I knew it was going to be a tough match. Giancarlo pulled guard, which didn't surprise me, but I was interested to see how Joe kind of approached Giancarlo's guard. And it was a good amount of Giancarlo closed guard, and then he had a really quick movement where he got up and kind of spun around Joe Pilmer and got his back. Then Joe escaped. But somewhere through that transition, I think Giancarlo locked up a triangle. For me, the feed wasn't the greatest on this particular match. So I couldn't see how he set the triangle up, but Giancarlo did finish this one by triangle choke.
Right. Yeah. I think, it cut out for me too. I think it was, just the production, but yeah, it looked like a triangle. And yeah, I think it all started, from that. I think he was in closed guard or half guard, and he just kind of like threw on a guillotine attempt or like a front headlock, and then just brought his feet out, scooted around, took the back, and then he ended up getting that finish with the triangle like 20 seconds after he went for the back there. But it was, I find Giancarlo, when I competed against him, like, he's fast and he's athletic, but a lot of people don't realize how strong he is, you know, like he, like when he goes for collar ties and stuff, like you feel his weight. It's he's a lot, I think he's just like pound for pound, like quite strong, you know? So, I mean, although he was, Joe was quite a bit more weight than him. It's not like you're going against someone that much smaller, like, cause he's not as weak as someone that's in his weight class typically, you know? So I think he did pretty well there. I could tell, cause he'd hop up and they'd do like some stand-up exchanges and stuff. And Giancarlo is just feisty. He's down to battle in whatever position. And, yeah, I guess he just had the edge in the sense that, he was a little quicker than Joe and got around to the back and finished from there.
Yeah, yeah, and obviously I knew, I mean, whoever wins this match is going to be a really tough final. But like I said, total different styles. So, you know, Giancarlo, I got to be concerned with his movement and trying to move around a lot. Joe Pilmer, well, I got to be concerned with him not putting his weight on me and trying to kind of move around him. So, you know, obviously it ended up being Giancarlo, but it could have been a totally different match. So that's kind of the interesting part with the jiu-jitsu tournament. You know, you're going to have to adjust your game depending on who your opponent is. So Giancarlo got his spot in the final. It was me and him in the final match. We'll quickly talk about the women's semifinal before that, which was Madeline versus Brittany. Now, this was the match I messed up on my stats because somehow I thought it was an armbar. The feed on this one, I didn't even see the match. So somehow it cut out for me. So Madeline got guillotined by Brittany. But was this the one that was the quickest one of the day?
I can't remember.
I think that it might have been. It was a short match. Like, it was definitely under 5 minutes. It could have been shorter, but, you know, I was pretty focused on trying to get ready for the final, so I wasn't the most into it live, so I was disappointed I couldn't see it on the feed. But yeah, I've trained with both of them, Brittany and Madeline, and Brittany's doing very well lately. She's competed at some IBJJF opens, and she's getting a lot of experience, which is very valuable when you're going out, elsewhere, traveling, going against people outside of your comfort zone. Madeline's also a very seasoned competitor too, so I thought it would be a very good match. But Brittany was able to win that one by guillotine. So then we had the women's final, which was going to be Thali versus Brittany. So back to the men's final, which was myself. So, okay, back to the backstory. February breakthrough. That was the first time I got to compete against Giancarlo, which was in the finals of the breakthrough event. That was a no-gi match. That was a very long no-gi match. That was around 20 minutes, I think. right? Scott, you were there for that one.
Yeah, that was an incredible match. That was a barn burner for sure.
And yeah, Giancarlo, he did amazing that day. He beat my student and our teammates, Mike McLeod, that day. So, you know, Giancarlo, we got to see quite a bit of him, you know, since had this gym. He competed against you. He competed against Mike. He competed against myself. So, yeah, that was a different type of match because no-gi, obviously, as everyone knows, is different than gi. Gi, you have so many handles. Your body is covered in handles for your opponent to grab, right? The gi that you're wearing is the weapon for your opponent and vice versa. So one of the questions that I got when I was talking about this podcast, which was, what did you feel more comfortable in, gi or no gi, leading up to this tournament? And it's kind of a tough question for me to answer because right now I'm doing heavily more no gi. I'd say about 80% no gi. So I guess I'd have to say no gi for my current training. But my whole entire jiu-jitsu career, which is 15, 16 years, I would say except for the last year and a half to two, let's just say for the last year, for number's sake, I'd say 90% of my training has been in the gi. At one point, I was one of those people that was like, fuck no gi. I don't want to do it. I only want to train in the gi. Still, some people are like that, but I feel like it's less of an opinion these days. No gi is exploding in popularity. I think that's kind of more the future of the sport. But most of my training and most of my competing has been in the gi. As a blue belt and a purple belt, I usually did much better in the gi than in no gi. It was just kind of a personal choice and goal where I wanted to go and do more no gi for myself. And because I think it's more of the future and I want more of my students to be more no gi kind of specialists or whatever you want to call it. So anyways, that was a no gi match and it was a very long match. It was very tough. I was eventually able to get Giancarlo with a rear naked choke. I knew this one would be a different type of match because it was in the gi. And I already just explained all the reasons why. The way this one played out in my eyes, I knew I was going to pull guard. Giancarlo got on top. We kind of went through almost like a Barambolo type of movement. And then the key moment in the match, if you didn't pay attention to this, please watch it on my YouTube channel and you can pay attention this time. But Giancarlo attacked a toe hold on my foot. And as he's attacking the toe hold, both his hands are committed to my foot. I started going for the back grab and was able to grab a hold of his gi jacket and pull him in towards me. Now, obviously, you wouldn't be able to do that in no gi. So that was the advantage of the gi, the extra material and the grip, where I was able to manipulate that position and then secure the back. And then from there, it was riding the fucking bronco of him trying very hard to escape. You know, obviously, Giancarlo, he's a warrior. He wants to win this just as bad as I do. But I was in a position where I knew I had dominant position, and I just thought, you know, I cannot let this guy escape. So the last thing I want is Giancarlo getting out, building momentum, and then, you know, firing off attacks. So it was, I'm not going to say lucky, but just kind of opportunistic that that happened to happen. And if you train with me before, you know, if you go for my foot, especially for a toe hold, I am quite good at kind of manipulating that and getting on your back. So I was able to kind of take advantage of that situation. It still took me a while. I mean, you've seen him trying to buck and escape. And I mean, you were my corner man. So I guess what were you thinking when you see me in good position on him, but kind of taking a while to finish? What were you thinking?
I could really tell that like you weren't, you really didn't want to give up basically like mount and back. Just very little separation. Like you said, you let a guy like that out. I mean, you don't know where he's going to take it because he's got so much energy and he's just talented. So I could tell you you got to that position. You didn't want to let go. You didn't want to have to restart and try to get back to it. And you were throwing the subs at him, and he was battling. But you could like audibly, like you could hear his breathing over yours. It was quite evident how hard he was grinding to try to get out of there. And yeah, you just a really good mount and back retention. And I'd say, yeah, you probably fatigued him. I'd say that was part of the reason why you ended up getting sub. And then, yeah, you just kind of like chipped away at him until something opened up, right? Is that pretty much what you felt?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would say that was right. I remember at one point going for kind of a bow and arrow choke. And he got into that. He did escape the back at one point, but I was able to get the mount again. And like you said, I was very careful of any time I went for a submission. I felt like if I was losing it at all, I just took a step back and then just got the position. And one thing I've learned a lot from, especially from watching Gordon Ryan compete, and this is a huge difference that I made compared to the second Rogue Grand Prix, or sorry, the first Rogue Grand Prix when I lost to Jarrett compared to now. If you watch the match that I had against Jarrett, my mount game was a lot different, and I didn't have the same ability to like tire the opponent out. I had Jared mounted for quite a while, but I wasn't tiring him out. I was just sitting in mount, and I was waiting for him to kind of give me his back, which never happened. And that's why I lost. So one of my goals after that tournament was to have a lot better mount game. And obviously, anyone that's watching this knows who Gordon Ryan is. He's the best mount player in the world. So I studied him a lot. And one of his main strategies for mount is to get the person's elbows elevated up above their head. Because when you're trying to fight from here, you're going to get exhausted. If your elbows are down towards your body, if you can picture that, if you're listening, you're going to be able to move a lot tighter. That's going to lead potentially to an escape. Versus if your arms are up, you're basically a sitting duck. And you're going to have to work really, really hard for not much reward, for basically nothing. So that was my strategy and something I've been working on getting a lot better at over time. You know, since 2019, I've been kind of studying not just specifically that game, but it's something I've definitely been trying to work on. And obviously it paid off for this one. I was able to get the finish with I was going for kind of a double lapel choke from the back, because I figured I figured I was gonna try to win by choke, but it was just so happened that he started to escape the choke and the arm was right there, and I just jumped on the arm and really cranked on the arm bar and was able to get the tap and get the submission. But yeah, it was quite a relief to finally win that belt, like, you know, everyone knows, trying for quite a while. And like I said to you kind of afterwards, like, you know, it's great that everyone thinks that I win everything, but that's not the case. You know, I have had a lot of losses in my jiu-jitsu career. And, you know, you can't help but think about the times that you've lost, because I feel like I've also lost a lot of important matches, finals matches. I've lost matches three or four times where a trip was on the line and I thought I was going to win that and I lost. I lost in the finals of the world championships. I've lost in tons of matches locally. So, you know, I feel like, and obviously a lot of people don't like their loss. No one likes to lose. It sucks. But the people that are very successful in life, I think, have probably the most amount of loss. And they, you know, really suck at whatever it is they're doing or whatever it is they're trying to practice until they work and work and work. And they finally kind of get something that's worth having. Because if you win at everything right away at something you just started, it's not obviously not very valuable. So, you know, we know how hard jiu-jitsu is. And if you win a competition, you know, people love that because they realize how fucking hard you got to work to get it. So yeah, I was pretty happy to get that one done and to win a belt. I've won a lot of medals and tournaments in my career, but I've never actually won a belt before. So it's pretty cool.
Fuck yeah. It's a sweet belt. That thing's heavy.
Yeah, it's awesome. So hopefully one of many more to come.
Yeah, we still got some room on the walls at the gym, you know. Plenty more room for belts.
Yeah, plenty of room for belts, yeah. So next, final match of the tournament was Thali against Brittany. Now Thali, she was won her other matches by armbar, but this one was different because she was able to get the back and secure a gi choke. That was the gi choke from the back that was in the final. And, you know, I would say it was just kind of like just the classic, got her hand deep in the collar and was just able to get the submission. And all of Thali's matches were, I believe, under 2 or 3 minutes each. So her total time was definitely less than 10 minutes. I want to say it was maybe 6 minutes of total mat time. Versus Brittany, she had that very long first match. You wonder if maybe that played a little bit of a factor and if Brittany was a little bit tired kind of going into that.
Well, yeah, I mean, like 6, 7, 8 minutes, whatever it is that Thali had versus Brittany, probably upwards of what, like 40 minutes maybe? like yeah, 24 plus like two plus, I don't know, her, what was her, the third one? She only had three, no?
Yeah, she had three. She would have, let's say close okay, to a half hour. Let's say close to a half hour versus yeah. six, right? That's a big difference.
Yeah, definitely. Four or five times as much, right? So it's, And I can't remember exactly how that match went, honestly. That's like, that should, it was the finals. But yeah, she, Brittany's strong. And I think she did try to play the strength game. And I think Bally just, she was stronger at least on the feet.
Yeah, they both seem to have a good solid judo background, but yeah, I think Dally was just able to get to her game a little bit quicker than Brittany. And what's interesting about them is that they'll have a match coming up.
Right.
At FLA events.
Next weekend, right?
Yeah, this coming weekend. So yeah, it's, I don't even know what day it is. But FLA is coming up next weekend. Yeah, I'll probably post this, I'm thinking probably around that time, probably very shortly after. And yeah, so it will be interesting to see in that match how it plays out.
And this is Nogi now, eh? Next weekend, yeah.
It'll be different. And it'll be interesting to see if Brittany changes her strategy. Now, I'll probably release this after the match. So I'm thinking if I was Brittany in Brittany's shoes, I'd probably try to change my strategy and try to play half guard. I try to probably pull a half guard. I think it'd be very difficult to take Sally down. And I know Brittany has a good half guard because I train with her. And if I was Brittany, I'd also maybe think about a leg lock, maybe trying to open up the leg lock game, only because I have never seen Thali go for a leg lock. And I'm not saying it's a hole in her game, but I'm just saying it's maybe potentially somewhere where she could go for something when it seems like she's just been so dominant that, you know, I think it would be difficult to take her down and possibly do much else. So it will be interesting to see how it plays out. But if I was in Brittany's shoes, I would change the strategy. Half guard and like think leg locks to combat some of Thali's pressure.
Yeah, I think Brittany is a bit of a leg locker too anyways. So I mean, it's like it's not really changing her game too much anyway. It's just kind of using something else that she already has.
Yeah. So the next kind of big event in maritime jiu-jitsu coming up, it would be the FLA Kumite or Grand Prix. I'm not sure what they're calling it, but there's an FLA tournament for a belt. I'm not sure how many people are in it. I think it might be a 16-man bracket. There's also a women's belt on the line, too. There's going to be some exciting matches for that. I believe Thali and Brittany are outside the bracket. And in the bracket, I know Sarah Wilson. She's in the bracket. Big fan of her. I love watching her matches. I know Tori's in the bracket. Madeline is in the bracket. Some of the same women, so I'm excited to see that. And it's also a very tough men's brackets. I can't remember right now. Do you remember many of the guys in for the FLA?
I'm trying to think.
I think it's tough. I think Jesse Allen is in it. I think I want to say Joe Pilmer, maybe Nathan Douglas. I can't remember, but there's a lot of the people you would know from maritime jiu-jitsu, the maritime scene in this tournament.
Definitely. Yeah. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I do remember some familiar faces. But yeah, the women's brackets, a lot of the same faces, but, you know, it's always exciting to see all those people compete. And it's just like, it's nice to, when you have contacts from like previous tournaments, like, oh, they did this, like, they got the finish here on this. Like, you know, it kind of adds a bit of a story to it, you know?
Definitely. And yeah, it's cool. Who knows who's going to win the FLA bracket championship. I know Giancarlo, I just remember he's in that one too, but I think it'd be very cool if we had a champion versus champion match, have the rogue champion, me, take on the FLA champion, whoever that is. At this time, I do not know who it is, if this is released before or if this is released after the event. I don't know who wins it now. So, you know, it could be somebody, and when this is released, I'm not going to know who it is. Maybe if it's someone really tough, maybe I'm going to regret this. But I think it would be cool to kind of have champion versus champion. It'd be a very big match in maritime jiu-jitsu. Who knows where it could happen. But, yeah, I think that could be kind of cool. Just kind of talking about other tournaments coming up. I know there's a number coming up in the Maritimes. do you have anything on your radar for competitions, tournaments coming up?
Definitely the Submission Arts one in November in Halifax. They all, like, I mean, based on my competition experience, they always put seem to put on a good event, pretty well organized. You know, I mean, every event has its hiccups, but they seem to do a pretty good job. I mean, yeah, you ref with them, so you're the head ref. You have been for the past couple, so yeah, I'm sure you see a different side of it. But yeah, they always put on a good show, and having a competition in Halifax is nice. I mean, just not having to travel and whatnot. Then there's that quintet that we were talking about. That's October 7th. Is that in Truro?
Yeah, I believe that's in Truro, and that's put on by Guillotine Productions. And this is a benefit or a fundraiser. I'm not sure what they're calling it, but this is for Matt McGrath. All the proceeds will be going to Matt McGrath and his family. Matt McGrath is battling cancer right now. He's a very talented fighter, grappler, great guy, friend of mine, Matt McGrath. Yeah, we definitely support him. And yeah, so I had a message. I'm not going to say what team, but there was a team that reached out to me asking if I would be interested to be a part of their team. Now, unfortunately, I cannot. I am already scheduled to have a seminar and go to a wedding. So I'm already having a full day on October 7th. But Scott may potentially be joining this team. We're not going to tell you who it is. We're going to keep some mystery out there. But he could be involved in the quintet, which is a very kind of cool, fun style of tournament, don't you think?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I yeah, I mean, lucky them, eh? Don't get you, but they get me. But yeah, no, I think I'm a big fan of the quintet style. When we did that competition up at Merrimack, I mean, it was like, it was pretty low key, but it was fun. It was exciting. It's nice to cruise with your teammates, and it's like it takes some of the pressure off, but it's you also still want to perform for your teammates, you know. It's so it's, yeah, I think it's great. I'd say there's probably a future in that style of competition for jiu-jitsu in general. I mean, you saw the last quintet that the B Team Bulls and so on. Like, it's the boys are hyping it pretty hard. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of that locally and with the big dogs. But yeah, it should be pretty fun if I do end up competing with the mystery team. But yeah, I'm curious to see who comes out, and especially when you're representing your own gym. I mean, you want to do a good job. You want to prove, like, everyone wants to prove how hard they've been working or whatever, but you also want to prove, like, you know, my gym's legit, or like my gym's better than yours, you know. It's it's a pride thing for sure.
Totally. Yeah. And yeah, for myself coming up, you know, the next month for sure is going to be a little bit uncertain for me. We're expecting our second child, our daughter, to arrive pretty much any time. My wife is due on November 5th, but our son was born early. So, you know, I kind of have to be ready. What I'm trying to say is I can't really commit to any tournament right now. It's like possible at any time. So, yeah, until she's born, I'm not going to commit to anything, even though there's a lot of events going on right now. If things work out, I'd love to be able to pop in just to show my support for these events. I love to support the local events and all my my guys. I'm not sure who will all be competing and whatnot, but, you know, like to support the local community. But in the short term, like we mentioned, the quintet style events are a lot of fun. I would love to have Presley BJJ compete against another team in a quintet style match, or just kind of a team battle like we did against Maritime Jiu-Jitsu recently within the past month. We just organized, you know, just four or five matches that we just had, and then we just kind of did an open roll after. Yeah, so I've had a couple other people mention to me that they'd kind of like to do something similar. So anyone that's watching this that has a gym, or, you know, a couple guys that they'd like to do that with, I would love to have a match and compete alongside my guys. And, you know, we also have a number of blue belts, white belts, that would like to compete too. So in the short term, anyone that's interested in that, reach out to me. In the long term, I have always had a goal to compete at the ADCC trials. I've never got to do that. I did an ADCC open, like the trials is the one that you compete for, that you actually win the ticket to go to ADCC. The trials is coming up in a couple weeks in October, which I will not be at, but I would like to compete potentially at the next trials. I'm not sure when the West Coast one will be. It'll probably be next year. That could potentially be really cool to be at, or if not, the next East Coast trials, which would be probably a year and a half or so away. So I think it's a good long-term goal. I'd like to just do the trials, be a part of that. I think it'd be awesome. Like, you know, there's tons of high-level guys in the trials. Nikki Ryan's doing the trials. Like, anyone that's a named grappler is often competing for experience in the trials. And yeah, that'd be awesome to have a couple guys go to. And also, I was thinking next year would be cool to have a couple guys go on, like, you know, some type of jiu-jitsu almost trip, like either like the Ontario Open, which is a big tournament in Ontario that not many people go to from around here, which would be new for me and for anyone that would want to go, or just kind of get somewhere maybe in Canada, either for a tournament or some training experience that I feel like would kind of, you know, bring us up a level, you know?
Yeah, I think it'd be super cool. The furthest I've competed would be in New Brunswick, I suppose. But the local competitions are great, especially for me. I mean, only having been around for a couple of years now, but so I'm still seeing new faces. But yeah, especially for a guy like you who's been around longer than time itself here in the jiu-jitsu community. I mean, you know everyone. You've competed against most people. I mean, there's lots of new guys coming, but getting different looks and different reps against all these, I don't know, there's talented people everywhere in the world now, right? So so to go to a bigger competition, you just get different looks. It's it'd be pretty exciting for sure. I know I'm looking forward to doing something like that in the future, whichever tournament that ends up being.
Yeah, and I know, like, you know, I think tournaments are allowed again in Montreal and in Quebec. They were banned for a number of years. It was just a weird combat sports law or issue, but I believe they're allowed there again. It would kind of be cool to kind of make your way, or make our way, you know, do a trip or a tournament to Ontario this year, or maybe tournament Alberta one year, or, you know, seminar or two would help along the way if anyone can help organize that. but yeah, I think it'd be cool kind of get across Canada almost. You know, I love that the Canadian jiu-jitsu scene is growing. When I was coming up, you know, there wasn't many people that were that good at jiu-jitsu in Canada. You know, Jake McKenzie, obviously he's awesome, and he did a lot internationally. But it's cool to see the Canadian scene grow. Like, you know, Dante Leon is amazing. He's like the WNO champ. Ethan, on the B team. There's a lot more people coming up from Canada than there used to be. So I think even in Canada itself, you can kind of get some really awesome training and tournament experiences.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. So yeah, just wrapping up. This was the Rogue recap. Me and Scott went up. We got the job done, won the belt, brought it home. Yeah, thanks everyone tuning into this. It was fun to do, kind of just talk about it while it's fresh in our head. It'll be a cool little time capsule in a few years. Thank you to Rogue and anyone that was involved with putting on the event, because I thought it was very smooth for an event that was held in a hurricane. And thank you to everyone that competed and was a part of it. Anyone that was a part of the event and any of the competitors, please come train with us anytime. We'd love to have you at Presley BJJ. I guess that wraps up this episode. Thanks for joining us, Scott, and helping us recap the matches. And it's awesome. It'll be cool to help you train for SAU and potentially that quintet thing. And yeah, man, I think we'll have some exciting stuff coming up in the future, not so far off.
Definitely. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, awesome. I'm sure it won't be the last time. So thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good night.